Welcome to MLB.com Extras, the Los Angeles Dodgers. I'm Richard Justice of MLB.com. I'm joined by Allison Footer of MLB.com and MLB.com's Dodger writer of many, many years, Ken Gernick. Allison, first of all, when you look at this club, Dodger Stadium is packed every night. Dodgers leading the major leagues in attendance. Yasiel Puig is a superstar. D. Gordon has emerged as a star. They have maybe the two best starting pitchers in baseball. What's not to like about the Los Angeles Dodgers?
Yeah, and I think that maybe we should have learned some lessons from last year that when they're down, they're not out. And when you look at this roster from top to bottom and you see just the superstars at every position and every spot in the rotation, I don't think that anybody could have ever counted them out. And I think that there's a very good chance that we will be in Los Angeles sometime deep into October like we were last year.
Yep, baseball is better when the Dodgers are good. Let's bring in Ken Gernick, longtime Dodgers beat writer. Ken, one thing we've learned over the years is that teams that are bad have a long worry list, but teams that are good have a dozen things they're worried about. Right now, what are the things that concern the people that run the Dodgers at a time when you look at the club and it looks almost perfect?
No, you're exactly right. They can't sleep at night. They're worried about their pitching, you know, and everyone should have worries like their pitching. But
right.
As far as the rotation goes, the back end, Dan Heron, Josh Beckett's hip has been bothering him. He's going to miss a start. Heron got off to a great beginning in April into May, and then he's tailed off. So you've got two guys with a lot of mileage on them. Dodgers really don't know what they're going to get out of those two guys, and they don't really have starting pitching ready in the minor league. So they're worried about that. They're worried about the bullpen. Their setup men have been a little shaky. Brian Wilson, Chris, they lost Chris Withrow to Tommy John surgery. So they have that. And then in some ways, they almost have an embarrassment of riches in the outfield. They've got four outfielders and really five if you count Scott Van Slyke. And they've been playing better when they're not all healthy. When they're all healthy and they all want to get in the game, there's problems in the clubhouse. But Carl Crawford's been out for a month, and that's the month that they moved into first place. So Crawford coming back healthy creates that traffic jam again. So I guess when spending $235 million, you have different problems than when you're spending $100 million in today's world of baseball. But the Dodgers do feel they do have some problems.
So with that being said, I mean, as we come close to the trade deadline, what do you see the Dodgers doing? I mean, are they going to try to go out and get some pieces or stay pat? I mean, obviously they're trying to make a push to go a little bit further in the playoffs last year, which would be the World Series. But do they have any kind of commodities to trade off to maybe strengthen some of these areas that you're talking about?
Well, they do have the outfielders, but the outfielders come with some baggage, big contracts, and underperformance in some cases. They're not going to trade Puig, so that leaves Ethier, Kemp, and Crawford, and each one has a big contract to absorb, either the Dodgers having to eat part of it or the other team taking it on, and maybe in a swap of bad contracts, that's a possibility. Maybe there's a reliever out there whose team isn't in the race. They want to get rid of that contract, and maybe they would take on a contract in return and maybe flip it for some prospects. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to go about it. The Dodgers usually are busy during the trade deadline. I would expect them to do that. I do think that starting pitching, even though a month ago it wasn't a concern, I think now with Heron and Beckett it might be. So I think they're going to be looking for a setup man and maybe even a fifth starter.
Ken, I heard Rick Mundy say the other day that every month Yasiel Puig has been in the big leagues, he's become more disciplined at home plate, chasing fewer pitches outside the strike zone. What ways have you seen him change from last year to this year? And in terms of your personal dealings with him, is he growing up in that way too?
Well, let's start out on the field. He is showing more discipline, and that's gotten a lot of attention in the last month. What hasn't gotten a lot of attention is the cost of that is his power. He's lost power. He went the entire month of June without a home run, and yet he still was elected to the All-Star team. I think a lot of people, if they really had looked at the stats, would have wondered, wait a minute, what happened here? So he may have gone too far the other way. He might be too disciplined, and that might not be his game. You know, we've seen major league players like Clemente and such who were not disciplined, and that wasn't their style, and they were great players maybe because of it. And it just may be that that by harnessing him in some ways, it might take away from some of his strengths. So we're going to have to see if he's able to break out of that. As far as in the clubhouse and his interaction with the media, it's still less than ideal, let's say. He was the most comfortable rookie I've ever seen in a major league clubhouse, as if he had been there for 10 years. And with that comes kind of a confidence or arrogance, and he's treated the media as if they don't really matter to him, and I guess that's his right. But that really hasn't changed very much this year from last year.
I'm kind of fascinated by Dee Gordon. You know, he kind of took off, and I know they've sort of been waiting for him to blossom, and he's just been having a really fantastic year. How much is it important? I remember talking to somebody from the Reds during spring training and saying, you know, this team is going to go by what Billy Hamilton does. If he's good, then the team's going to be okay, but if he can't do anything in that leadoff spot, then the team's really going to suffer. How much, with Igor just solidifying himself in that role, how has that really kind of contributed to the success of the team?
Well, he has, and maybe in part he has because the expectations that were put on Hamilton weren't put on Dee Gordon. Nobody really expected any of this. You know, he had already been up. He'd had a glimpse of success, and then he flopped. And so this was really kind of like a last gasp situation. Dodgers went out and spent $50 million on Cuban middle infielders. If they thought that Dee Gordon was going to become an all-star, that never would have happened. So from the management on top all the way on down, nobody expected Dee Gordon to do this. But I think Dee Gordon did because he's a hard worker. He's got major league bloodlines. He's seen what it takes to be a success and even to be an all-star. And he's a hard worker. He fought the move to second base initially in his mind, but in talking with his father and Barry Larkin, who's a mentor of his, he became convinced that this was the best move for his career, and he totally bought into it. He did everything that they asked. He worked hard in spring training, coming out early. He always had confidence in his hitting, even though maybe some management lost that confidence. And so you've got a guy who works hard and has a lot of confidence and obviously has some great tools and game-changing speed, and he's put it all together. I do think that part of the reason he's been able to do that is that the expectations were so low that he was just able to focus on his game and not have to worry about impressing anybody.
Ken, Don Mattingly's had an interesting last 12, 18 months, however you look at it. Right now, as we sit here in his life as a manager, what are the strengths that he brings to the job?
Well, you know, the players will tell you that one of the strengths is that having performed in a high level for as long as he did as a player, he understands what the grind is, and he has realistic expectations. He doesn't panic when things are going poorly. He understands the ups and downs of a 162-game season. But on the other hand, he does know when to draw the line, and I think that if you look back at last year in May, around when the Dodgers were in Milwaukee, and also this year, in June, at the end of May, early June, he called out his club both times for not playing the game the way he demands them to do it. And both times, those meetings, those team meetings where he kind of aired them out, the team immediately responded by playing better baseball last year and this year. So I think he might strike the right balance between a player's manager and yet someone who understands when it's to draw the line and when it's, you know, the difference between pat on the back and a kick in the butt, and I think he's been able to show both.
Do you think that because of the career he had and because of the reputation that he has, just his greatness as a player, do you think that that helps when he calls the team out, like in public, and, you know, says it directly to the media? I mean, would it be a different reaction, do you think, with maybe some other managers who don't quite have the track record?
Definitely for first-time managers, yeah. I mean, you've seen a lot of the great managers were not necessarily great players. And also, some of the great players have not become great managers, and Mattingly's trying to do what's tough to do, you know, and be that guy who was great on the field as a player and wants to be a World Series champion manager He does have the respect of the players, but it only goes so far. Today's players don't have that respect back to yesterday's players the way the previous players did for their prior generation. So there is that generation gap that has changed the relationship between a manager and the clubhouse. Donnie seems to walk a pretty good fine line there, but that doesn't mean that that a Matt Kemp won't react poorly when he's told he's no longer got the skills to play center field and the team is better off when he's in left field. You know, that didn't go over well with Matt Kemp, and that was a message that Donnie had to deliver. So, you know, it only goes so far, and eventually you're still dealing with the egos of today's ball player.
Ken, looking at Matt Kemp's numbers, it looks like there have been stretches the last month or so where at least the numbers have been very good. Old Matt Kemp, in watching him every day, where is he now as a player? And is he that guy that just can't play center field anymore and be a premier center fielder?
Well, I think the real issue is physically he hasn't shown this year the power or speed that he had when he was an MVP-type player. And so the speed is partly why he's no longer in center field. And the power is why he's not really considered an all-star at this point in his career. Now, the question that I think teams that are looking at him for possible trades and even the Dodgers, the question that nobody really can answer is this just temporary coming off, you know, two really bad injuries, or will his body never be the same? And I don't know the answer. The Dodgers don't know the answer. I'm sure the teams that are looking at him and considering trading for him, they don't know the answer either. It's a puzzle, and it's just going to take time for him to show, either to demonstrate that this is really all he is now, which is still a good everyday player, but not necessarily an all-star MVP, or if he can regain the physical aspects that are needed to be that that superstar. And right now he doesn't have it, but he's not hurting the team by being a real left fielder and delivering clutch hits. You know, it's just a question, again, almost like with D. Gordon, what are your expectations? You know, they're obviously paying him to be a superstar. Right now, he's not.
Okay, one last question regarding just Clayton Kershaw. I sort of feel like I don't want to miss any of his starts. I feel like I need to watch him all now. When you're sitting there watching him, I mean, you know, obviously he gets compared a lot to Sandy Koufax, which is, I guess it's good that he gets to talk to Koufax from time to time, but I mean, have we seen the best of him? Is it just the sky's the limit for him, and he's so young, and he's having so much success? What do you think, like, when you're watching him on a regular basis?
Well, I was young growing up watching Koufax in L.A., so I sort of can make that comparison. He's not yet as dominant as Koufax was, but he's getting pretty close. It's a different era. He's not gonna complete 27 games a year the way Koufax did, so some of those comparisons just will never be made. But as far as coming to the park, when his teammates come to the park and believe that that's that day, they know they're going to win. That's the feeling that you get around this team now. And those are the rare ball players who can provide that and really lift the game of everybody around him, and he's able to do that.
Ken Gernick of MLB.com covers the Dodgers, has covered the Dodgers a long time, does a great job. Thank you for joining us today on MLB.com Extras, the Dodgers.